Shall we begin?
Let's begin.
This is incredible! Johnny Buss with a masterful solo goal.
What a finish from Samuel Silveira!
Robertson! And the Man City youngster opens the scoring.
Oh, and it's Geraint Kewell who has equalised right at the end.
This is the Soccer Who's podcast, the show all about Australian football as we look to unearth the next generation of Socceroos who will one day wear the green and gold.
Welcome to another Soccer Who's podcast episode. Episode, James, 88, would you believe? My name is Lockie. I just addressed James there. 88 of the official non-bonus type episodes.
There you go.
Can you believe we've been doing this for this long?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't know what I was expecting.
There's been big breaks in between.
So. We have had a couple of breaks, and we might have to address that even now, because I saw a post on Reddit, someone saying, oh, yeah, Soccer Who's podcast, they used to be good, and then they stopped posting. And I took that to heart, and I did say, hey, no, I'm so sorry, we stopped for a little bit, forced break.
No, they're actually saying that they used to be good, then they stopped posting, and since coming back, they haven't been good.
Well, and even then,
we're washed up.
If that is the feedback, then we will get better. And I hope this episode is better than the last one.
Takes a while to return to match fitness after suffering an injury.
Hey, before we go anywhere, I'd like to officially welcome the Central Coast Mariners to this episode. They have made the AFC Cup final. I can't exactly remember who they're playing. I should know that. But massive prize money on the line for just getting there. And then also, if they win it, it's going to be a nice little payday for the Mariners, who a couple of seasons ago, had you told me they'd be making a continental final, would not have believed you. And they're still on track. Still on track for a treble this season. So we've never had an Australian club, at least in the A-League era, do a treble. Because the year that the Wanderers won the Champions League final, they didn't win. But kudos to the Mariners. And yeah, what a fun little story out of there. Even at the start of the season, had you told me that they would have made the final, I wouldn't have believed you. With the players that they'd sold, with Mark Jackson not starting out the season all too well, and now doing very well.
Yeah, and it was a good little brace by DiPizio as well in that game. It's just a shame that the two Australian sides couldn't come up against each other in the final, obviously. They knocked each other out in the knockouts early doors because of how it works with the regions involved. But good to see an Australian team in the final. And I believe it's the first Australian team in an Asian final since the Wanderers won it.
Okay. That sounds about right. Do we have the name of the other side they're playing?
Who they are going to play is Al Ahed, a Lebanese outfit. It won't be played in Lebanon because of flight issues of Australian players getting in with visa stuff.
Is it, because I know the Champions League is a two-legged final. Is it the same for the AFC Cup, or is it just a one game willy?
Just a one-off game.
Okay. Played on, I'm assuming, neutral ground, because that would be strange to give one side a home ground advantage.
Yeah, I think it is neutral because, well, we're playing a Lebanese outfit and Australia can't travel to Lebanon with the situation currently unfolding over there.
Fair enough. Well, no date confirmed, at least as far as I can tell with a quick Google, but potential, 2.3 million Australian dollars, which would be very, very nice for the Mariners, would help pay for player wages for a season and then help them continue to grow the club, which is what we want to see. Another great end of season storyline, which is what we were talking about at the end of the last episode, that actually brings me to, I guess, the first cab off the rank from this episode. We did ask, what are some of the storylines you're looking forward to seeing at the end of the season? Mostly trying to angle for players vying for promotion, that kind of thing. But we got a response, Smoothie, saying a Spurs podcast feed partially titled Pole Position to Sign Australian Wonder Kid Thomas Waddingham. Who is that guy? So, I mean, that was a story that has popped up this week. Do we want to chat about now? Do we want to chat about later when we chat about some of the other transfers?
Maybe chat about when we get to our transfer center segment.
Okay.
A couple of other names there to speak about.
Yeah, a couple of other transfers. Well, let's officially then move on to the Oli Roos, because the game was played with Qatar before last episode. We were kind of hypothesizing, going, I hope we can get a result. Wasn't able to happen. So let's chat a little bit more about the Oli Roos and things that have happened since last week. Australia has been knocked out of the AFC Under 23 Asian Cup. A nil-all draw with Qatar. Obviously, we needed to beat Qatar by a greater margin than, I believe it was, Jordan beating Indonesia. And that wasn't able to happen. Nil-all. We didn't score a single goal at this tournament.
It's a bit embarrassing.
A little bit embarrassing. What makes it even more embarrassing this week is that an article put out by The Age, Marnie Vinyl, basically confirming that Iran Kunda would have liked to have been called up the first time, but wasn't. And I don't think we need to flog this horse any longer, but that does, you know...
Yeah.
It's not great, right?
No, it's not, because it shows that there wasn't consultation with the player.
Yeah. So that would have been nice to have him. I don't think he is the sole reason why we didn't qualify. I think we kind of touched on it last week. Bit of a coaching issue that I have, that it just doesn't seem like we're getting the results out of our junior national teams that we really should be, based on the talent that we have within them. And if you want to hear our thoughts, you know, you can listen to last week's episode. But anything to add to that?
No, it's a lot of the same kind of things in terms of the tactical setup of the team and just not being brave and wanting to use the attacking areas of the pitch centrally. That's really what it boils down to. And there's a very old kind of idea in football, and breaking it up into different segments. One of those segments on a football pitch is called Zone 14, which is basically the edge of the D, kind of in the final third, not extending into the box though. And what's so important about this zone is because it creates the most attacking output, not from shots taken, but in terms of chance creation, because that's how you create in the wide areas. That's how you create vertical balls into the box. And if you don't have any presence in there when you're in the final third, you're going to struggle. And the issue is, all too often in Australian football, you want to pack multiple players in the box, shove everyone else in wide to fang balls into the box, and you have no edge of box presence, except for your two sixes who will often sit deep, basically almost where the centre-back should be. And it was the same thing in this game, no edge of box presence, and it absolutely killed us.
Yeah, Zone 14 being, I'm looking at a diagram here, because I'm not great at remembering numbers and where things are, being that area that at a kickoff, your centre backs are likely standing within Zone 14 in your own area. And then when you're attacking, it's probably the area where your attacking midfielder might linger on the outside of the box, or, you know, your two eights or defensive midfielders even kind of linger on the outside of the box. That's probably the best way of trying to describe it visually.
Most dangerous place on the pitch. And
yeah,
that's where we typically put our least creative players. It's usually where the box workhorses end up, which is a big issue.
Yeah, so, I mean, we will see what comes of a review of our junior national teams, if there is one that happens. I think Ernie Merrick has a bit of work on his hands, if you ask me, just to see whether things need to be changed. And if you want to hear more about kind of our thoughts, yeah, jump last week's episode. James shares a little bit more, but yeah, not wonderful. Would have been great to see football at the Olympics. And I think you're kidding yourself if you're going, oh, no one really watches Olympic football. I think it's an opportunity for our youngsters to be playing at the highest level that they possibly can. And I think, for me, embarrassing that we didn't get any, like, Indonesia, with respect, are not a massive footballing nation. Even Qatar and Jordan are emerging within the Asian footballing federation, but I would like to think, with the level that our players are playing at, that we should be able to do better than we did.
No doubt.
Anyway, that's the Oli Roos. Shall we look at some of the players that are
Let's go on some positives.
Some positive news. Let's do that. Let's go around the grounds. Let's chat about some players. And this week, I got a manager as well who's been doing well. I would like to raise you one. Harry Kuehl is the first person to discuss this week as we go around the grounds, because Yokohama have made the AFC Champions League final. So in both, I guess, the second tier, for lack of a better term, but I guess maybe that is the best term to describe the AFC Cup, and the top tier, we have Australians representing in the finals of respective competitions. They won 3-2 in the second leg and saw out the fixture 5-4 on penalties. They now play Al Ain, I want to say, in a two-legged final, May 11th and 25th. So hopefully for Harry Kuehl's Yokohama, he gets to see some silverware. I know he's part of the coaching staff at Celtic, and they won a fair bit of silverware, but this would be his first piece of silverware as a manager, as a head honcho. And really, he's had an interesting kind of journey to where he is at Yokohama. Was it Watford's under 21s, then went to Crawley Town as the manager there.
Very successful stint there as well.
Went to then Notts County in 2018, Oldham Athletic, Barnet, Celtic as a coach, and then now at Yokohama. And yeah, some of those lower level English sides, I remember at the time him getting fired from a couple of these places and things not quite working out as he might have liked, and people going, oh, he's just like, he's a washed up man. I think he's kind of reinvigorated himself under the tutelage of Ange. He's definitely come a long way and grown a lot as a manager. And I really respected, just this week, there was a press conference and he was just talking about what his ambitions and goals are as a manager. And not to say that he was a bad manager, you know, before this, but I really, really like what he had to say about just wanting to make the players at the club one little percentage better each and every single day. And coming in, obviously, you had both Postecoglou and then Kevin Muscat doing a fantastic job at Yokohama, and him coming in going, well, I've got my own style, it's slightly different, but we still want to play similar, like, attacking, exciting football. And I don't know, my respect for him as a manager has grown massively, and I hope that they do win and he gets to prove all these people wrong that maybe were doubting him a number of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it takes time as a manager, right? He was a very young manager ultimately when he took the reins at Crawley, and it was successful there, and I think he definitely left way too early to go to North County. Obviously, bigger club came calling with a bigger payday. He's like, oh, I'll step up, and the lights were a bit too bright, so it took some time, and then a couple of difficult jobs with Oldham and Barnet, who are clubs just in absolute turmoil when he took over them. So not surprising those didn't turn out well. But yeah, some time under Ange is just a coach to reset and to learn from ultimately what has been a very experienced manager and has succeeded a lot. Has clearly done very well, because this Yokohama outfit is playing very, very well, and it'll be very interesting to see them coming into the final, see how they go, because it's their first ever Asian Champions League final as well. So it'll be a very interesting game to watch.
Yeah, it will be. I think it's interesting. We were talking about the Oli Roos both just before and then last week, and about the managers that are currently in that setup. It seems to me, and I'll acknowledge my bias, I'm a big Ange Postecoglou fan, but it seems to me that people who have interactions and learn under Ange seem to really take away some great advice and go on and achieve, for the most part, you know, achieve success. That's not a hard and fast rule, but I like that he's almost a secondary place that Australians can go and learn under. Maybe we'll see Mile Jedinak coaching at Yokohama soon and achieving success there. Although rumours and talk around Tottenham fans is that they don't absolutely love him as a set-piece coach. So maybe not.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But, I mean, most successful Australian coaches right now is Ange, to managers that have coached under Ange before in Muscat
yep.
and Kuhl, and then Peter Klimovsky as well in FC Tokyo. That's like the four most successful coaches right now in terms of the Australian pedigree. And I mean, when three quarters of them are Ange or have learned under Ange, I think there's definitely merit to what you were suggesting.
Obviously, it's not a hard and fast rule, but I think when you're looking at the types of managers that the A-League is currently developing, and I think we're going to be having potentially a bit of a manager merry-go-round in the off-season. Yeah, I wonder how Football Australia sees its responsibility in developing coaches. And obviously, as a manager, you learn from your own experiences. But it would be nice to see more Aussies, in a managerial sense, finding success overseas.
Yeah, and it just takes time, really. And I think that's probably the biggest thing for me and why the NSD is also really important, which obviously there's been some news around a particular name there. But having a more fleshed out pyramid is really important for managers to cut their teeth, right? Because the amount of managers that are in the state leagues that get up to NPL and then there's nowhere really to go upwards from there because there's not many professional opportunities. It's incredibly cutthroat to get there. And worst of all, they can't prove that they're good enough to get up there unless they get one of these extremely limited opportunities because there's no promotion relegation. So having a national second division is going to be crucial for manager development, which I think is probably the least spoken about aspect of why it is important, because having good coaches and good managers is extraordinarily important for player development.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably the single most important factor for player development. And we haven't had a good system of developing coaches and managers in this country for a very long time.
No. And as someone who's a Brisbane Roar fan, who we've had issues even in the past couple of years with developing managers and seeing, I guess, the fruits of that. Anyway, that's probably enough about managers because this show is more about the Socceroos. But, you know, I think managers do play a part. Let's get into some actual players, though. Noah Skoko, playing Hajduk Split, Croatia 1, made the bench for the first time. Senior appearance, well, not appearance, but at least bench appearance. And fun fact for you, James, Ivan Perisic, also at the same club, I found out, and also in the same sort of position, came off the bench, though. And, yeah, it was a 1-0 win for them. So, nice, I guess, for Noah, not that he's same position as Perisic, but someone with that sort of pedigree, that sort of experience in the international game, to and I guess in Europe as well, to be learning under him and being in the same squad.
I mean, he's also learning under Anthony Kallick as well.
Oh, sorry. The big name Anthony Kallick.
Anthony Kallick's massive, mate. Don't know what you're talking about. Good, nice little Australian player there.
Yeah.
But in terms of Noah Skoko, very... very talented young player. One of these dual national sets, pretty much absolutely crucial for us to, you know, tie up and get into the squad for the Socceroos. And dual national, of course, with Croatia, has played youth Croatian football the whole way through. And I obviously right now, I'd say it's probably erring towards Croatia, being that he's playing in Croatia, has been playing for the Croatian youth teams. But, you know, son of a Socceroo.
That's why Anthony Kallick is so important.
Yes, the link. The link to Australia. But good to see Noah Skoko being on the bench for the first time in his career. And hopefully we see him in green and gold, not navy blue, red and white.
It's more of a royal blue, I'd say. Mm. But red and white, definitely.
Red and white, yeah.
Shall we chat about someone who is also a dual national? Zach Gilson, and unfortunately, the Blackburn product, he is injured for the rest of the season. And what makes things worse, maybe better for him, Blackburn could potentially be relegated as well. Only 4 points separating 22, which is one of the teams who'd be relegated, and 17th. So a bit of a relegation scrap happening for his side.
Yeah, look, it's one of those things that you never want your side to be relegated. But at the same time, if you're Zach Gilson getting relegated and being owned by a club that has started to see you break through in the first team in the championship, could actually be a good thing for his development because it means not having to go out on loan. You're owned by the club. they're incentivized to play you because you're a young player. And it's then of your level. So actually could be a good thing getting relegated.
Okay. Obviously, I don't want to directly, and I don't think you can directly compare a player like Robertson and Gilson. But Robertson played really well in that League One competition before he got injured this year. Do you see, if they do get relegated, Gilson and could have a similar effect, or is he still...
Not as good as Alex Robertson, yeah. Right? Alex Robertson is insanely talented.
Yeah.
There's a reason that he broke into the Socceroos, and Zach Gilson is kind of like on the edge of the Olyroos.
Yeah,
there's
sure.
a reason for that.
Sure.
The mental and tactical understanding that Alex Robertson has at his young age is insane, and it shows that he's been coached by Pep Guardiola. But in terms of first team output and appearances, yeah, I think he'd play a similar kind of minute load. He would be a first teamer in League One.
Sure.
And probably not, you know, starting every game, but he would be appearing in pretty much every game.
Yeah, okay. Good to know. Keeping on League One, Nicholas Bilakapic, Peterborough, got his first start since February 10th, which is what? That's, well, maybe close to 3 months, definitely 2 months, though. And it was a 2-0 loss to Cheltenham Town, although I was doing a little bit of stat digging because I was doing some homework before this episode. And as far as like save percentages, as far as XG on target preventing, he actually did a better job than the Cheltenham Town keeper.
It's true. He also outperformed his XGOT,
mm.
which is always a good thing as a keeper. That's kind of what you want to achieve. He had a decent game overall. Peterborough were, you know, to be honest, quite outclassed by Cheltenham side, which is unfortunate because Peterborough are in and around the promotion spots, but Cheltenham are in and around the relegation spots. But in terms of just sheer chance creation, Cheltenham absolutely dominated on the counter, and Peterborough had quite a horrible time. But it was good to see Bilakapic back starting. Obviously, hasn't started for a while, and good to see him earn that trust back from the manager. I mean, back in. Because start off the season as the number one, wears the number one shirt, so it was really unfortunate to see him not play for a while, and it's going to be really important for him in his last few games to see if he can stabilize, command that spot, because playoffs are looming, and if he can show that he's a good keeper in his last few games, championship football would be absolutely insane for his development.
Well, I think we highlighted this potentially in a previous episode, but the top four of League One, you've got Portsmouth, who have Cassini Yangi. I mean, we can briefly mention him right now. He scored a goal
in a title party.
Yeah, they lost. They went down 2-1 to Wigan.
Bit but hungover.
From yeah, Yangi came off the bench and scored, which is, I guess, that's all you want him to do. So they're at one, and they've secured promotion. Then you've got Derby County, who has Callum Elder on their books. They're sitting in second.
Played as well over the weekend.
Yep, they're sitting in second with 89 points. Then in third, we got Bolton, who famously has Iredale and Gethin Jones. And then fourth, you've got Peterborough with Bilakapic.
Which clearly shows if you want to get promoted, sign an Aussie.
Exactly. So you've got what seems to be here, based on the points that Barnsley, who are in fifth, you've got at least three Aussies, or three Aussie teams with Aussies in them, let's call it that, being promoted this year from League One to the
Championship. One very likely.
That's true. I guess the playoff, you know, Barnsley and Lincoln could come through, or whoever is in those fifth and sixth spots. Anything else on League One Championship type football you want to mention?
No, I don't think so. Was it just another good weekend of football for many of the Australians involved? Minutes played, which is always good, and it will be very interesting to see what ends up happening with promotion, because obviously Yangi's promoted. Mm. He'll definitely be playing championship football.
Yep.
They rate him over there. If Bolton get promoted, Iredale will probably be a fringe championship player, but Gethin Jones will be a regular starter.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, very good. And then, yeah, Peterborough, which obviously has a Bilakapic question mark. Yep. So will be very interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. Moving over to Sweden, James. Another youngster. It's been the episode for youngsters who are dual nationals as well. Peter Gwagas got an assist in a 3-1 win against Varsberg's Bolls, I'm going to say. My Swedish is not that wonderful. He played 74 minutes. He's, of course, on loan from Malmo, who are currently top of the first division. He's playing in the second division for Örebro. So, a decent little performance from him. Hopefully impresses, you know, those back at Malmo, who, yeah, comfortably do very well within the Swedish league. Great development, though, for him.
Yeah, and he's a very talented young player as well, Peter Guagas. 23 now, so he's kind of had a bit of a stunt in his development, in all honesty. Earlier on in his career, when he was on the books at Brighton, it looked like he was going to be a very promising player coming through. Had a couple of injuries, couple of issues. Moved back to Sweden with Malmo. He's a Swedish, Australian, French tri-national.
Okay.
Doesn't look like he may be international anymore. But late development, which he's starting to show now, could mean... issue with Australia that we have is left-footed wingers, of which he is one. So it is always worth keeping an eye on those left-footed wingers, because it's definitely a depth issue we have, because you have Craig Goodwin at the top, and you have Mark Tilio second. And do you want to take a guess who the best third best left-footed winger is?
I want to say that you think it's someone like Connor Payne or something ridiculous.
Yeah,
like
it would be Connor Payne.
Yeah.
Unless you want to take someone like Armiento. And because that's kind of the drop-off you have next.
Sure.
So it's important to keep it to have some players like Guagas, because there is definitely a hole for that in the Australian national setup.
Yeah, well, also in Sweden, want to highlight another left-footer, Alex Gersbach. Got an assist in Kalmar's first win of the season. Played four games so far, only one win. What I found interesting, though, is that Gersbach seems to have switched from being a left-back to a right-back.
Yes. He has been a little bit, which is very interesting, coming into the Swedish system over there. And main reason for that is he's actually playing a bit inverted.
That so he's stepping would into
midfield as a DM. Yeah,
that would be the only reason that I could see someone starting out, who's a left footer predominantly, then switching to the other side of the field. It would make sense that it's for inversion reasons.
Yes. I mean, you see it quite often, left-footers playing on the opposite side as well, because growing up, if you're left-footed, you're told to use your right foot in training, because for whatever reason, that's how training's usually set up, especially in Australia, to just favour right-footers. So if you're left-footers, it's a good chance you're more two-footed than everyone else.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's a problem with our youth coaching ranks. We've had our thoughts
on
that.
We've already
good
shared.
To see Gersbach get an assist, and good to see him back playing in Europe after what was a nightmare stint in the MLS that we have both greatly shared our thoughts about.
Mm. In terms is he back why in the
why on earth he left Grenoble?
Yeah, is he back in the frame for Socceroos, or maybe wait and see? Give it another couple.
Well,
of months.
It's a similar thing in terms of left-footed wingers. When you look at the left back, you've got Jordi Bosz, you've got Bajic. Joel King is your next best one, which is a very very average.
I'd say goes back surely over King.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's at least based on ability. There's a huge drop-off after Bajic.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, could this next player potentially step in? Connor Metcalf in St. Pauli's latest win over Hanover.
Big win as well for the playoffs.
Oh, a massive game. Still a tight title race, I should say. The side whose name I forget right now, who's sitting in first, is still ahead by 1 point. And there's still some big fixtures to go. So one that'll go right down to the wire. But Connor Metcalf got an assist this week, playing as, a left mid, a left wing back type role.
I really liked it.
The left mid in what you might consider a back five or a three back. And yeah, in a 3-4-3, if that's how you want to look at it. Not where we have seen him play previously.
Mm.
But a new role.
It kind of brought out all his strengths, though. That's why I like it. Because we've, in the A-League, right, we saw him as this box-to-box playmaker, right?
Yep.
Defensive third, can break things up next to O'Neill, but then could be the progressive passer in that relationship. Then we saw him move over to Germany with, like, we like this creation that you have. Let's play, you know, this kind of right forward role, where you'll drop into the half spaces, have a bit more of a free role to create in the final third. And now what we're seeing is, well, what if we combine them both and still in a wide area at a left mid where he can be that slow build-up player still, defending in deeper areas, but also then create higher up the pitch from wide areas, tucking in as the half space, but also holding wide and having that freedom to interchange fairly freely with Hartel, and that really unlocked Marcel Hartel, who had a very, very good game as well. So really good to see Connor Metcalf play so well there. And there's an ongoing kind of joke in football, I guess, in general, of if you're a box-to-box midfielder, you play your highest level football at fullback. Maybe that could be the future for Metcalf when he steps into the Bundesliga.
We have talked about this Australian side, and we've got the Jordan Boss at left wing experiment going. If you're Graham Arnold, are you looking at this and going, rubbing your hands, going, this is good, this, I like what I'm seeing here? Or does it just add further headaches for you?
Yes, both. It does say this is good because it gives you left back cover if Jordan Boss gets injured.
Oh,
but I'm worrying now that it's going to validate Arnold's idea of playing Boss as a left winger even more.
Oh, yeah, that's probably fair.
Ideally, it's just cover. It's like, oh, he can play this role well. It adds a bit of flexibility. If Boss needs to come off for a sub, this is a better stopgap than Bayet to this point.
Yeah.
But
something to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, knowing Arnold, he's like, permanent left back. There we go, sorted.
Well, I mean, if they get promotion to the Bundesliga and he starts playing as a marauding left back, it could work. But I am a big advocate for the Jordan Boss at left back experiment finishing up. And sorry, at left wing,
yes,
I should say.
Thank you.
And
scaring me for a moment there, mate.
I'm sorry. Boo. Gotcha. No, the experiment with Jordan Boss at left wing, I think, should finish, and he should be reinstated into left back, and we should then try and look for someone who isn't Aziz Bayich. James, finally, Nick D'Agostino, playing in Norway, got a goal in a 1-1 draw for Viking, and I can't see him playing Socceroos in the near future, but I guess if we persist with this two up top, I guess, methodology.
Well, I mean, in Norway, he's now a left winger.
Sorry, what?
They're playing him on the left wing as an inside forward. So wide and build up, then tucking inside into the half space and attack.
So what I'm hearing is that Jordan Boss no longer a left wing, Nick D'Agostino.
Look, if Nick D'Agostino is what it takes to get Jordan Boss back to fullback, I'm all for it.
Okay. And do you know what? I'm willing to sign that petition as well.
Mm. Should Nicholas D'Agostino be in the Socceroos squad? Probably not. But if that means we get Jordan Boss at left back, I'm all for it.
Look, that's something I'm willing to get
He
behind.
Did play very, very well in this game, though, I will say.
That's good. He's not a left-footed player, though. He's a right-footed.
No, he's right-footed. That's why it works well, because he's cutting inside.
Sure.
And when you watch his games, especially watch his highlight reel in his time of victory.
Yep.
What he's best at is when he comes inside and he hits it on the instep with his right foot and hits it with power. And that really, that striking technique is brought out best when he's coming in from the left side, which is why Viking are playing him outside as a left winger.
I was more so just trying to illustrate, does he jump above Connor Payne? But obviously he's a right footer, so your right footer left wingers thing and your left footed left wingers thing, it still stays the same. The status quo is remained.
Well, what I'm saying is if you want to play a right footer out there, it suits because then you can just play Boss as the overlapping fullback. It's almost like you can get the best of both worlds. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's too well.
Yes, Beck also played.
Okay, yeah.
This game. Came off, you know, after 70 minutes, but another good match of football for him. Young player developing really, really well. And Stensness, I don't think we've mentioned it that he's back from injury, but
that's
he's back from injury.
Hear.
Played 3-4 games now, just off the bench, building back up his fitness. But great to see him back from his ACL tear, and a player that could be very important for the Socceroos going forward in terms of his ability to play centre back or six.
Franco Lino, not in the squad.
Not for the game that I'm speaking about. No.
Okay, fair enough. That's all right. That will be it for, I guess, going around the grounds. There's been some transfers, rumours, some confirmations already at this point in the season, which you know is only going to get increasingly more as the season begins to wrap up. Should we chat about those couple of players, James?
Sounds good, mate.
Kicking things off, at the start of the episode, we did mention this player, Thomas Waddingham, rumoured to be going to Tottenham.
Mm.
Now, if you were to ask me, I don't think that's the best career move for him at this point in time. I think another season in the A-League would do him well. But also rumours that the Roar are going to sign Ibasuki or Zawada or both of them, and that would then see him, I guess, drop down the pecking order for strikers.
I don't think he would.
You don't think so?
I think he's talented enough that he would actually win that. And here's my reasoning, Lachlan.
Sure.
Watching Thomas Waddingham play, he's a nine. He's a true nine. And we don't have many of those in Australia. And that means a lot of, you know, maybe you just watch a bit of football. I doubt that if you listen to this show, because we go into some very nerdy football stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
But when I watch Thomas Waddingham play, I could see a lot of talent there. And it's a lot of talent that has had very little service. In terms of touches, he is literally, I think he's only he's second bottom per 90, I believe, out of all forwards in the A-Leagues.
Okay.
And that gives you an idea of the service he is getting.
Yep.
Pretty much no service. But what he does do is with the service he gets, he creates chances. And it's very impressive that a player with this little service has had 41 shots on the season. So that's about two a game, right? If you look at per 90, it actually goes up to about 3.5. And when you have true nines, the most important aspect of when you're looking at that game, especially from a younger age, is, well, do they get off the shots? You'd be very surprised how much of an indicator that is for a good number nine, because too many number nines just don't get off enough shots.
Yep.
And you look at any league in the world, you see the best number nines, what they top the charts in may not be goals, but what they always top the charts in is chances missed. And that's because they get off shots. They get off shots. And Waddingham gets off shots. And at his young age, where he's still developing his technical ability, and more importantly, he's still developing his mental ability to get high quality chances, he has shown that he has an idea of where to position himself, where to get chances, where to get his shots off. And his shots are pretty much all in the box as well. So it's really impressive in terms of how he creates chances for himself through his positioning. And as his finishing abilities improve, as his physical attributes improve, as he's able to get to the ball quicker, and he reads the game better to get in a position to receive the ball earlier, he's going to really explode at some point. And he's got all the markers of a really good number nine. And I could see why someone like Ange Postecoglou, who's what he values most is work rate. All right, work rate, but smart football. Not just running for the sake of it, but running with purpose. And Waddingham does those two things to a very high level. So I can see why there would be interest for Waddingham. Not as a first teamer.
No.
But a couple of years maybe in the Premier League too. And then when he's 21, 22, breaking into the first team.
Yeah. I mean, the way I see the rumour is that the rumour mill's just kind of going, we need to pick an Australian player that Ange might be interested in. And there might be actual truth to this rumour. But I don't know. I just think another season before moving overseas would be best for him.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Udinese is also apparently very interested, which is an Italian side that has had a historical very good record for developing just true number nines.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think another year would be good for his development, but what I will say is it shouldn't come to anyone's surprise that there's strong interest from Europe, because he has a lot of the markers of someone that will develop quite strongly.
And I agree with that. I guess I am overseeing young players just before they're quite ready, going overseas and then getting lost in the system. I'd much rather see players become heroes for their local sides, like Nestor Iheanacho, who has been doing great things for Adelaide. And you saw even what we'll call his farewell tour in the last couple of weeks. Everyone just wants a piece of him. Everyone wants to get a selfie with him. Everyone wants a signature. People are wanting his shirt. And to see him go over to Bayern, sure, it's probably a similar thing for Waddingham, I imagine, where I guess for Iheanacho, they might be actually wanting to use him in the first team or at least get him trained with the first team. But I don't know, it just seems way too early for a player who's at Thomas's level at this point in time to move to a Premier League club like Tottenham's level and expect to have any sort of fruit from that move. I would much rather see him have another season and a half in the A-League, play really, really well, establish himself, and then continue to grow. And maybe, sure, bring in another striker for the Roar who can help mentor him a little bit.
Yeah, Ibusuki would be phenomenal in that kind of role.
Yeah.
They're very similar players.
Help mentor him a little bit, become a better striker. And then, yeah, hopefully by the time he's scoring 10 goals a season, at the moment, I think he's got six.
Six.
But, you know, when he becomes a 10-goal-a-season striker, then you can start to go, okay, let's...
So he scores a brace against Adelaide and a brace the next week and he's good, right?
There you go. I'm okay with that. Hey, a couple of other players on the move as well.
Mm.
Giuseppe Bovolina from Adelaide has signed for Vancouver Whitecaps, obviously in the MLS.
Yes.
And reported fee, a little bit disappointing.
Yes.
Only $225,000 reportedly, Australian dollars.
Very disappointing.
Any other thoughts other than it was very disappointing?
The fee is disappointing, not the move.
Yeah.
I think it's a good move. I also think it really highlights the lack. Another reason the national second division will be important. Bovolina should have played a lot more football by now, and if he had played a lot more professional football by now, that fee would probably be 500, 600K, right? Because there's less risk then involved for Vancouver, because that's what Vancouver would be thinking when negotiating with Adelaide, right? He's only played one season professional football. That's risky for us. We're interested, but it's risky. And having more professional opportunities is so important for the development of these young players, but also important for the development of their fees. So it's sad to see Bovolina go so early. I hope it's a bit of an upward step, but not too much of an upward step in the sense of he's going to be in the first team.
Yeah.
Right? And it'll be a good on-ramp to Europe, hopefully. Because he's a very talented young player that should be in and around the fringes of the Socceroos squad. And it will be very interesting to see how he develops, because I think he's got a big future if everything pans out. And it's kind of in a similar vein to the Waddingham boat, right?
Sure.
He has to get first team football.
Yeah.
And when you look at every single A-League export, from my mind, of the last decade, look at them all. The most successful exports from the A-League, those that go over and play first team football, even if it's at a lesser standard and it gets to the higher standard later, they go over and they play senior football. They play first team football straight away, no loans.
Yeah.
So hopefully for Bovolina, going over and playing Vancouver means he'll play first team minutes and get opportunities. And hopefully it's further enforcing for clubs like in the MLS that Australians are worth it, and that is those fees will go up naturally over time.
Yeah, exactly. If you've listened to this show for 5 minutes, you will probably know that we are big advocates for transfer fees being implemented within Australian football and then encouraging clubs to, I guess, develop young players and sell them for fees. Sign them onto contracts that are a couple of seasons long so they don't just leave on a free, and then actually make a profit on them, because that's the thing that's going to help grow our clubs, especially when clubs don't have the ability to own stadiums or facilities at this point in time.
Yeah.
The transfer fee is actually the thing that's going to get you money.
And I think, as much as I hate to say it, Melbourne City have been a great example of that and how it's worked really well, because we've just seen it. They've just signed Nikovsky, Joey's captain currently, 15 years old, have just signed a 4-year scholarship deal.
Yep.
Massive time span. I know he's 15, so obviously you can't move until he's 18, 19, so that's still 2 years technically.
Yep.
But it's still a sign of growth in that aspect and a sign of clubs being more willing to lock players down long-term, even if it's riskier financially. It's for the betterment of the clubs in terms of getting transfer fees, because if Bovolina had a 4-year deal, there's a good chance that fee inflates to 400, 500K.
Mm, exactly. Lastly, and we'll make this quick, because the episode's been a little bit long. Very interesting. It felt like a little bit of a silly article, and that's no disrespect to the great man Vince Rigari, but a bit of a showdown at a certain dinner in Sydney between Francesco Totti and Graham Arnold.
I heard it's about 06, actually.
Well, yeah, that's true. Over Christian Volpato.
Oh.
And in an interesting stage of his career, probably hasn't progressed as much or gotten as many minutes, I should say, as
thank you.
We might have hoped. Sorry, James. Gotten as many minutes as we might have hoped this season. Sassuolo heading towards relegation. but also Volpato linked to Everton, Verona, Monza, a couple of other clubs as well. So
I think it's been a very natural development in terms of minutes. I think it's been quite astonishing the amount of minutes he's got at a young age. And more importantly, the amount of important minutes he's gotten. Because as you said, Sassuolo is on the verge of relegation at this point, and he's the player that his coach is now turning to as they head towards that. So I think it's actually been a very good year for him developmentally. 22 games is double last year's amount.
That's true.
In terms of impact on those games, yes, I would have liked to see a bit more. I think that's fair. But in terms of a young player coming into his key developmental stages of, well, figuring out what does it mean to go through a full-length season as a professional, I think he's passed that test with flying colours. And, you know, he's a very talented young player. I can see why Arnold is still wanting him. I think it's very wise of Arnold to keep on asking the question. And
do you think a season in the Serie B would be good for him?
It's similar to Gilsonen, right? I think that would be bloody phenomenal for him. Because, to be honest, he would be a star player in the Serie B. It would be an Alex Robinson kind of situation in the Serie B. If he goes down there, he would be one of the best players in the league.
Mm.
And if he goes down with his parent club as well, he's going to be playing 90s pretty much every week.
Yeah.
Really good for his development. And you'd really then see just how good he is, because we've seen how good Alex Sakate is and how good he has been. And he is, you know, I'd say about 3/4 of the player that Volpato is.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. That'll be it, I think, for this episode.
Do we want to touch on the transfer rumors for Volpato as well quickly, though?
I mean, until there's anything a bit more substantial.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I
just heard he's going to the best team in Merseyside, mate.
Oh, shut up. That'll definitely be it for this episode. Oh, on a day like today where Liverpool have lost, title's gone down the drain. Anyway, that'll be it for this episode. Thanks for ending it on such a buzzkill, James.
That's all right.
That'll be it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. Obviously, yeah, we're back. If you didn't know, in case you missed it, tell a friend. Share this, actually, though. If you do enjoy what we do, we would appreciate letting people know that it's a podcast that talks weekly about Australian football and specifically focusing on the Socceroos. But we generally... we brush on other parts of Australian football as well. And you can get in touch with us, soccerwhospod@gmail.com. If you do like what we're doing, obviously we're open to positive feedback. TikTok, Twitter and Instagram is where you can find our socials. And until next week, enjoy the football.